Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
On the hit TV show Lost, there were always heartbreaking moments. Times when characters would die in sudden and shocking ways. One of these characters didn't even make it out of the first season. This character died while climbing up to a plane, which fell to the ground, gravely injuring him. Despite the best efforts of Dr. Jack Shepard, ultimately, this character had to tell Jack that he knew he was going to die and Jack needed to let him go. It's something important to remember when you're heading towards any sort of ending. There comes a point when you need to let go, even if it hurts. For this lesson, we'd like to thank Boone right here in the Doom Room. I'm Alex.
Oh, man, sorry. Well, we're saying goodbye soon here in the Doom Room.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
Justin.
I'm Pete.
Wow, we can't, that with rhyming doesn't matter anymore.
That was a lot of wind-up.
Well, welcome to the show, Pete. We're going to be talking about the Doom Patrol, Season 4, Episode 11, Portal Patrol. And I got to tell you what, my rhyming dictionary getting very loose at the end here.
Wow, it's true. That's all. When you started with a Lost reference, I was like, ooh, he's clearly been building up to this one. And I was like, oh, nope, maybe not.
Well, spoilers for this episode, if you haven't watched it on Max, this is the second to last episode Doom Patrol. The Doom Patrol has been thrown in a time portal. They are wandering through time, and ultimately they've lost their immortality, so they're trying to get that back at the same time. So in this episode, we see them jumping to different points in history, specifically interacting with Niles Calder in order to get their immortal wheelchair episode. And we get some big revelations about everybody at an emotional level. We get some big revelations about the continuity of the show. We get some big changes for Jade and Cliff in particular, among other characters. Yeah. And by the end, everybody is headed towards the final conflict. We've got Immortus. We've got Butts. We've got one last episode to go. But Pete, I want to start off with this. This is jumping ahead, but we had Jane's storyline here. Jane, as she travels back in time, to talk to Niles and try to get her own immortality from him. But in the process has another, I guess you call it a therapy session with Niles.
One more sit down.
One more sit down. And we finally get what you've been asking for all season. I will tell you, I gasped when it happened, like gasped out loud again, spoilers here, but the underground showed up behind Niles when Jane finally owned the fact that she was raped by Kay's father. They were all sexually assaulted by him. That's the big revelation. That's the thing that brings her puzzled together, is ultimately understanding that they're all part of the same whole, but we get to see them all at the same time. We get to see Hammerhead. We get to see James Sundown. We get to see Pretty Polly, all the rest. Pete, how are you feeling here?
Oh, I'm feeling a lot better. This episode was a huge hit for me because it's the team starting to work together. We finally dealt with the underground. When she picked up the tape that said Hammerhead, I got choked up. I was like, oh, Hammerhead, we'll never get to see you. And then we did. And I was just, when they cut to the shot and all of them in the room, I grabbed my pearls. I was like, oh my God. Yeah, just so great. That we're finally dealing with that. We finally kind of got the last piece of the puzzle, put it together. And it was emotional. It was really great to finally be able to deal with that. I wanted a nun with a chainsaw, but other than that, it was so great to see everybody.
And if you want your own set of Pete's pearls, you can buy them in our merch shop. They are just, they're beautiful, expensive, yes, but you have to pay for the what you love, you know?
Yeah, I'd also mention, Pete, just as a hot tip, it's a little easy to find a nun that doesn't have a chainsaw. Like, you can go to
almost any church. It's a combination that you rarely get, so having it on the show was such a huge hit, and to not get it one last time.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but if you were pleased with the idea of just seeing nun sans chainsaw, go to church, man.
Well, yeah, it all comes back from the
hot tip. I could have put that together, but
I think Shakespeare said it best when he in Romeo and Juliet, when they told Juliet to get thee to a chainsaw nunnery, and she ran out the door and joined up.
Classically trained, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, I'm hoping exactly even if it's after the credits, if we get it like a just kind of a her cutting down the a title card or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just one more time.
That's not going to happen, but I will say, all season we've been asking about what's going on with the underground. Why are you holding back the underground? Where are they? This is very frustrating. What's going on with Jade's storyline? They're dragging it out. I'm ready to apologize to the staff of Doom Patrol.
Yes,
because
you should.
Well, no, I really think like they nailed this moment. Like Pete is saying, that shot of coming to the assembled underground behind Niles, like I said, I gasped, I got choked up. That was really beautifully done. It only works if you hold back on that all season long. And I apologize for doubting them because I think it crushed it. Justin, did it work for you as well?
Yeah. And in fact, like this episode was really fun, really chaotic. There's so much going on. And the fact that what emerged at the end was this like sort of the final Jane focused episode and maybe best and final, if I can use a topical phrase for Jane's character, I thought was great. It was such an affecting moment when we saw the whole underground there, and they were able to like pull this show, you know, covers a lot of this territory a lot. They're like, hey, they're their own biggest problem. They can't get out of their own way. Jane's trying to sort herself out has been almost every episode has touched on that. Yeah. And the fact that they were still able to bring it together and make it feel new while ending where we've been 100 times in the room with Niles Calder, I thought it was just like really hard to do. And when this episode started and I was like, oh, it's Endgame, but for the Doom Patrol, I did not think they would be able to get to such an emotionally affecting moment.
Go ahead, Pete.
I think that's what's nice. It's like we're really getting some great moments with some great characters. I mean, as soon as we saw Madame Rouge back at the Ant Farm, I was like, oh, shit, it's on. Like, oh, you're making her go back here to deal with all that? Oh, that's awesome. Like, this real exciting moments in this episode.
Well, I don't want to move on from Jane quite yet because I have a question for you guys. This is something that I was just struggling with a little bit while I was watching the episode, and I'm curious to hear from both of you about how you felt about it. I felt a little torn about outright saying that Kay was raped by her father. And the reason is not like, oh gosh, I'm uncomfortable about saying that, because you got to put that stuff out there. That is things that horrifically really happen. And I appreciate them taking it head on, but
it's been the story the whole time. It's not like this was a twist.
They've been hinting at it and you know what I mean?
Yes, that's the thing is, I guess my question is, do you feel it was necessary to say out loud?
Well, I tell you what though, I think having it blocked out, like giving, you know, this is a horrible situation, but giving that feeling of somebody who, when they go through a traumatic event, kind of blocks it out or puts something else on it. And then the fact that all her personalities and Niles were sitting across that table saying, say it out loud, get this giant weight that you've been carrying, just kind of like, you know what I mean? I think that was a when you are dealing with such a hard thing, like having the way that she dealt with it and blocking it and then having the clarity of like, this happened. This really happened, and it happened to all of us, and it was, I don't know. I thought that it was done in a way that was weighted but also dealt with different sides of things well. I think it was impressive what it did.
In watching the episode and experiencing that moment, I thought it was shocking. I was surprised they did it. But then thinking on it afterwards, I was like, oh, I guess that's really the whole point is naming it. Like, the whole point of it is she had to say it to take ownership of it or not run from it anymore. I think the analogy that Pete uses of, like, you're having this weight, you need to free yourself from it by saying it out loud and, you know, taking ownership of an experience where you're horrifyingly made vulnerable and your power is taken away. So she took back that power in that moment. And in a superhero lens, it meant she got control of her powers. The underground falls away because they don't need this device. She is just everything now.
Mm-hmm. Also, I like the choice of it being an older Jane who is able to come to this realization. You know, when you're the different personalities and different things, like, I almost think that she can't grasp it. So to get her to this point, to be able to have so much space for it, and to be able to kind of like have this dying event be able to unlock this other clarity, I think was something that was very kind of unique and interesting to kind of explore and to kind of have somebody go through and then have this kind of moment. I was really kind of moved with the amount of time and energy and the way they kind of did it, you know.
How do we feel about Kaleidoscope?
I like it. I mean, that's the thing. I was iffy just from a dramatic standpoint of naming the rape out loud because it is this thing that I think has been implicit throughout the seasons, but I understand the impulse there, the idea of rather than these personalities were to protect Kay, this is something that happened to all of them and they all need to own it in the same way. I like that. I think that's an interesting, again, dramatic way of hitting it. And the ultimate conclusion that she's not Crazy Jane, she's Kaleidoscope, that she is all of these different colors, all of these different ways of seeing the same thing, I thought was a really beautiful conclusion. So even if I was iffy about the moment itself, I appreciated the way that they get there. And more than that, I appreciated where they ended up.
The little use of colors there was also such a great punctuation for that moment.
Yeah. And I'm excited to see how it turns out with a fully integrated Jane in the last episode. That's very cool, and I'm excited about it.
They also did a really great job of getting you hyped for that last episode. When those credits roll, you're like, oh, man, I cannot wait for that next episode.
Well, I think she's going to be very powerful as well, going up against their biggest, most powerful enemy.
Yes, Isabel Feathers. Oh, and Butts. What's that? And Butts. Yeah.
Yeah.
My most the powerful enemy is also Butts.
Yeah, that's true. And your battle against Butts is unfortunately not going well.
Yeah, it's not going well,
great.
Dude.
I'm getting older, man. My battle against Butts, not going great.
And those Butts are staying the same age, my guy.
All right. Why don't we talk about some of the other characters? I'll throw out Cyborg just to start off with him, because he's another character. If the idea is to reach catharsis, if the idea is to reach your final form, Cyborg definitely already got there, but there's still a little ways to go. I thought the plot points with him were really interesting. Him throwing everybody into a pod. Also, Derek, the most important character of the season, coming back again.
I mean, I don't want to be a Derek hater, but when I saw Derek, I was like, come on, dude. Can't we? And he's like, look, I made Mr. Invincible, the robot we designed when we were kids. I was like, what? Why is this part of this?
I thought this kind of final evolution of Cyborg being Cyborg and being cool with being Cyborg and kind of being able to you know, doing SOS and his one friend be the guy who answers through their childhood connection, I thought was really nice. Also, is that his maybe possible daughter? Was he talking in the future? Ooh. Like, what was that?
Maybe.
Maybe. Because they hinted around it because she was so smart. I thought it was really cool of like a, you know, I don't know. I thought that was kind of a neat little thing.
It could be. I mean, to me, it felt like they were like, you could be a hero all you want, but the real gift you have is to teach these kids to be smart and to make their own toy robots.
The thing that made it acceptable to me about the whole Derek thing, because I'm definitely right there with you, Justin, where I was like, why are we going back to this guy?
Yeah.
Is the idea that Vic was the ultimate teacher and like, the guy who is running this school and everything, he comes in for the future. He talks to himself. That made it forgivable to me. It made Derek not like the main driver behind this storyline so much as Vic. So I like that move.
Yeah.
But yeah, fun stuff and fun. Great line about like, technically you were inside you when they're all inside of the sphere or the no decahedron or whatever it was.
Yeah. From that jumping off point of everyone just like clinging to Cliff, the horse gut rider goes off above them and they're like, what's happening? Like I was like, oh, this is the level of weirdness that I want from Doom Patrol first moment. And then they all get sort of wrapped up in Cyborg and it feels like a weird old Doctor Who, like weird British show that's on at midnight and you're somehow watching it through a staticky TV or something. Where you're like, what is this? Well, I love that.
And also appreciate that all of the characters call it out. When he's like, here, take my knuckles. That Cliff's like, what? What a gross. Ew.
But you're right. That's the weird fun of the show of like, oh, of course, everybody takes a knuckle. Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And they just roll with it at this point. They've been on enough adventures that they know it's okay. Another character to throw out there, Larry. Larry goes back in time and encounters himself. He and Keeg encounter the negative spirit. We find out the negative spirit was probably puppeting Larry a lot and walking around with him. And they have a little conversation about it.
They hinted about that throughout the seasons.
Absolutely. Given we've been kind of down on the Larry storyline, I think we got kind of a bulky one here. Justin, how did you feel about this?
I just feel like as a lot of the other characters make some bigger choices, Larry just feels like he's still stuck in the mud. And he gets even more, you know, negative revelations here about how, hey, you're infecting Keeg with all your bad vibes. And I like that idea, but I was such surprised that everyone else makes progress and Larry's still like, I don't know. I don't know, man.
And we're getting there with them.
I hope we got like 48 minutes. Yeah. So I guess we'll see. But I really like you pass your fear to Keeg is a nice thing. And sort of like, it's interesting that his story is like a father son narrative. Keeg meets.
Yeah.
Its father and Larry is sort of the other father of Keeg, I guess you could say, or the spiritual father. And so there's just some nice stuff there. I just want, you know, Larry's one of those characters that is such a melancholy presence. And I just want to see him in a pendulum swing up as opposed to sort of still frozen there.
Well, I think it's a little bit like, you know, he kind of went back in time or whatever to a younger self that was, I was hoping would give him a little bit more of a confidence talk of like, hey man, you know, you're fucking up your child. So trying to be so fearful and weird around him more is like a, hey, you know, you're doing great. Like, let's kind of, you know, not be so fearful around your entity or whatever that thing is that's leeching off your life. But you know, so it was a little bit, I agree. It was a little bit of a downer for kind of like, hey, instead of going back and being more connected with Keeg and, you know, his younger self, it kind of did the opposite. So I'm hoping for a bigger pendulum swing in the last step.
My big problem with Larry's storyline is it feels like he's being obtuse when he's engaging with these characters. Like, I understand we're viewers, we're not in this situation, but when he goes into a situation, he talks to the negative spirit and is like, why are you so bad? You're a bad negative spirit. Leave me alone. You hate me and you wanted to destroy me. And it's so clear from a viewer's perspective that, like, the negative spirit is trying to help him and give him advice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like,
and it's been doing that the same always.
For four seasons at this point. Yeah. Yes. So to your point, maybe Pete, I mean, maybe this is what you're getting at. I just want Laurie to, like, shut up for a second and listen to what, like, think about what's actually happening, because, and maybe that'll happen the next episode, but it's frustrating to watch him engage with both Keeg and the Native Spirit, where they're like, we're very gently talking to you. And he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What are
you? Fuck you guys.
How,
yeah.
How
I'm making
you?
Weird decisions without consulting you at all. And it's about your lives. And yeah.
And but mind you, people act like that. Like that is a realistic.
Yeah. Real,
yeah.
Very realistic. Yeah.
But it's frustrating to watch that, on TV.
Yes.
Definitely. And I would say that, like, his Larry story has shifted from, like, this self-flagellation outsider story from the earlier seasons to this is sort of an indictment of, like, helicopter parenting, it feels like. Like, all of his lines are just Keeg. He says the word Keeg. Like, that's got to be 50% of his spoken lines. There's Keeg, Keeg.
Yeah.
And then it's like you're putting your fear into your son is, like, is what I think the criticism of, like, what a lot of modern parents are. And it feels like someone on the writing staff or show is like, that's what he's doing. Let's get that. So I hope that that is part of the final resolution next episode. But, I mean, it was such a powerful Jane story, some Cliff stuff here. Madame Rouge, I think it's a good story. If we're leaving the next episode to be about Larry, I'm also surprised about that.
Well, I think, like, also speaking of frustration with the show, like, Cliff kind of going back and forth between being nice and an asshole, like, finally he kind of comes together and clicks in this last episode a little bit.
I mean, that's
finally
all he does in this show is be nice and then also an asshole. That's literally his. Yeah, that's not even an arc. That's just the guy.
No, there's a lovable asshole, and then there's the guy who's goes back and forth trying to be a good father for his daughter and then making horrible decisions that's hurting that relationship he's trying to protect.
Well, he, just to give a brief overview of his storyline here, Cliff goes back in time to Paraguay right after Willoughby and Niles Calder have gotten the skin tag off of Immortus, who gives Niles the immortality and gives everybody else their immortality or longevity at the very least. And they end up fighting at a bar with some of the flunkies of the German. I don't remember the name of the character.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, it's a bunch of guys with lit up axes. And ultimately, cool. Cliff accidentally breaks Niles' back is the outcome there, which is the thing that makes him realize, like, oh God, why is this my fault? Why did I do this? So I don't know. I really like that storyline. It felt very true to Cliff for me.
If that's really the origin story, the fact that Niles never brought it up to him was, I mean, that kind of makes you like Niles a little bit more, you know what I mean?
Well, I think that's the point. Like, what we established is Cliff is the villain of the show, and I've been saying that for a couple seasons now. So we got that
lovable
here.
Lovable villain.
Oh, that's a nice way to throw that in there.
That's weird. Pete didn't really take your bait.
Yeah, I know. He added a love in front of it. He loved my bait. No. How does this relationship
That's
work?
That's like a fish being like, ooh, I love these worms.
It's yeah. Great.
Thank you.
True. I'm going to marry this hook and worm. But I do think it's a great flip of, like, Cliff's anger, like, to what you said. Like, Niles is the one who has been keeping the secret that this man who he builds is the man that takes away his ability to walk for the rest of his life. So, like, that gives them, it puts them together as, like, long suffering secret holders who are sort of trying to help each other a little bit by not murdering them for what they've done to each other. So it makes for, like, a bit of a, like, a Mobius strip of, like, God, these guys are just so bad at being good.
Cliff and Niles. I'd throw out there, I know Pete has been very negative about Niles over the course of the show. I don't know if I've argued this before, but I think in a similar way to how we're talking about how Larry interacts with Keeg, the Doom Patrol interacts with Niles in the same way, where he's a flawed guy. He's not doing the right thing all the time. His main goal is, like Cliff puts out in this episode, to live one day longer than Dorothy, or like basically outlive Dorothy so he can always be there for her. And that's his main MO. That's the thing that he wants more than anything. But at the same time, he likes the Doom Patrol. Like, we get that in a scene with Jade. We get that in a scene with Cliff. It's true, less so in a scene with Laura, which I'm sure we'll get to in a second. But he doesn't hate them. He's not an unrepentant jerk. He's trying to do the right thing and doing it sometimes in the very wrong way. And that's been clear over the course of four seasons.
Yeah. I also thought that that scene was just like there's a great Cliff has a great like jump kick or I guess a kick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was great. There's fun fighting there. I feel like just commenting on the show, the last couple episodes, the show looks so much better than it did in the first chunk.
Yeah.
They definitely clearly have more money or more time or something to make the show look dope. And the singing episode, I think, really was the first one to show that, like, wow, there's a lot more going on here than there was in the previous episode.
Let's talk about Laura. We mentioned her earlier, but she goes back in time, as Pete said, to the Ant Farm and encounters herself and Niles. I thought the scene of her confronting herself and being like, I hate you, was...
Yeah, it was cool.
Man. I was worried she was really going to kill herself. And I was like, no, then you're going to get wiped out too. But yeah, when she realizes where we are and has the line, fuck me sideways, I was like, oh, well done. Well done.
Yeah. That whole thing and the putting the stamp on her own forehead it felt like something she's personally fantasized about, and she got to do it and sort of like I felt surprised by that moment. Like, they sort of got to it in the way that felt very unwriterly, felt very organic. And that's hard to do when you're like,
it is.
Because I bet you start with that image from a writing perspective. Like, we want to see her put the weapon stamp on her own head. How do we get there without it feeling like it was too fake? And they nailed it, I thought.
Yeah.
They do a great job in the show of like planting the seeds and then really kind of taking care of it along the way and then just kind of cashing out on it later at a perfect time.
Yeah. Overall, I thought this was a really good episode. A couple of little lines that I wanted to call out. Cliff saying, drunk Merlin is here about Willoughby.
Yeah, oh, my God. Right.
Very funny. Also, this is such a stupid joke, but nobody says it like Brendan Fraser. Willoughby saying, where are you from anyway? And Cliff saying, oh, I just came here from fucking your mom.
Yeah. It's fun.
Very fun.
So good.
It's very funny. Just hear quick, it
twice, it's still good.
Quick side note, to see Brendan Fraser in this show just doing this crazy shit all the time, to hear him. And then he's in Killers of the Flower Moon playing also a wild small role that was like almost Cliff-like by my eye. It's not. I won't say anything more to get into spoiler territory, but I was like, this could be Cliff in a different timeline. Wow. So he's just out there doing everything.
Good for him. Yeah. We did talk about this with the Larry thing. It seems like Larry is probably going to become a son in the final episode, which is pretty wild.
Well, now that I was like, oh, that's cool. But then I was like, do they mean he becomes like son S-O-N? Were we trying to use that language here? So I don't know.
Metaphors.
I'm curious. Similes? What they...
Wait, what are they? Homonyms.
Yeah. I thought it was like Keeg's dad was trying to say that he becomes a son. And because Larry was like, cool, a son. And I was like, I think it means S-O-N. I think that was maybe, and it, again, good little wordplay that who knows what it actually will come out to be.
Yeah. And what did you guys think about the fact that when Jane completes the puzzle, it turns into a magic eye painting, which I thought was very cool.
Oh, man.
I was trying to pause it
so I could do the stare thing at it, you know?
Yeah, you got to unfocus your eyes, Pete.
Yeah, you got to relax your eyes. Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Salvin, that was creepy to see you do that. Oh,
yeah, that is weird.
That was really
thanks.
Were
man.
You crossing your eyes or just yeah. coming to completion?
I don't know. Having
you
a seizure,
ejaculated.
Yeah, were you touching yourself?
A bunch. That was weird. A bunch. I was ejaculating.
Oh my god! Crazy.
What other moments from the episode would you guys like to call out, if any?
I just like the Jane at the end giving kind of like a pep talk, her kind of like fuck it speech a little bit, which it's great. It's when her and Cliff are on the same page. I'm having a blast.
Yeah. Well, and I love the line Cliff has right there. Like, Jane's giving the pep talk. That's where we are.
Yeah,
that's
another exactly. good line. Yeah.
We've been talking a lot about this season, about whether they knew this was the final season, whether they were heading towards the end. This episode makes me feel like, yes, they
100%.
Everybody is really heading towards their final forms. There's a big sense of this is it. It's all going down. We're putting everything on the table for the final battle. And if you watch the promo at the end of the episode for the final episode.
I didn't.
Oh, okay. Well, no spoilers here. But it definitely, like, the promo gives a certain sense of finality to it. So I'm happy about that. I don't want there to be like a cliffhanger. Oh, boy, what's going to happen?
Get a cliffhanger. Live?
I get it.
Yeah.
Rita hanger, if you will.
Well, and that's what, like, Rita was notably not here at all in this episode. Yeah. So feels like she's going to end up getting a lot of the story weight next episode, and assuming Larry as well in there. So that's exciting.
I mean, because, the two of them are great together, too. So hopefully.
Yeah. I guess you'd hate Cliff, but that's fine. We've got to find some new bait to get Pete on the hook here. That one's working pretty well.
Yeah, don't.
The idea at the beginning where Larry and Jane and at Doom Manor 96 walk past Cliff and he just stares out the window for like many years.
Oh, yeah, he just stared from like 83 to – I was like, oh, man, that's fucked up.
Bummer.
Yeah.
The Cyborg says, are you shitting me? And all the children are absolutely shocked by his language. I was like, what future is this where kids are totally can't handle a little shitting?
Well, I mean, you want the guffaw from the kids when they're swearing. I thought that was a fun use of, group of children.
In the future, it's all swearing. That's the future I want.
Well,
Pete, I think we can get on board with that. Right? The Jane and Niall scene again. He pours a big shot of the forgetting juice,
which
I thought was cool. I think was just regular Jägermeister, is what it looked like to me.
That's whenever I go into a bar, I order shots of forgetting juice. They give me Jägermeister. Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting moment because he doesn't drink it. Like he sort of considers it, and he doesn't. And to me, the implication is he never drank that, so he actually, like we were talking about earlier with Cliff, he knows all of this. He knows all of this happened. Yeah. He knows their futures. He remembers it, and he goes through this stuff anyway.
That could be. He also might have waited until she left before he drank it, which is what I was saying. You want to wait to the end. Because you don't want to have to, oh, no, now I have to forget this.
You want to drink it private so people don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best. And the only other thing I would say is, they all went into this. The mission was go get your piece of immortality from this different. You have 1 hour to do it.
Right,
and
right.
None of them succeeded. But they all got a piece, except for maybe Larry, of what they actually needed to complete their lives and personalities. Mm-hmm. So that was a nice little fake, real mission versus stated mission.
Yeah.
At this point,
go ahead.
I just feel like the mitten is just part of the costume at this point because they're not real. It feels like they're not going to deal with the taking off.
He's going to touch something. If it's not Rory, he's going to touch something before the end.
I do hope we get that moment where he takes off the glove and holds the baby.
Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah.
Who was most doomed this episode? Pete, who do you think was most doomed?
Well, Rita, because she wasn't in any of it. Which makes me worried about her. But I have to say, I feel like Jane was most improved. So I'm going to give it to Larry because he is just still not doing well.
Yeah, I would say Larry is the most doomed for sure in this episode. But I would say who's the least doomed Hammerhead. She got to come back for one more ep.
Yeah, great seeing it.
I agree with you guys. I'm going to give it a hat trick for Larry, who just is not as far along as anybody else.
Come on, Larry.
Laura might have to deal with some stuff because she left off slamming her own head with a weapon stamp. So, but that still felt like a little bit of catharsis there, which Larry didn't necessarily have yet. So we'll see. One episode to go. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Doom Patrol, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, we're going to leave you with a piece of advice.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Here's my advice for you, all right? If you're going through a hard time.
Build a tiny robot with your friend.
Nope. Find an old person, okay? They got a lot of free time. They've seen some shit. Just, you know, find an old person, and they'll help you.
Thanks, Pete. I'll try that.
Find an old person. Or as you like to call them, like future corpses. Coming soon corpses.
That's right.